I mentioned at the outset that Thanksgiving is taught from an early age by most families, indeed, and experienced by people all over. Mine was a privilege on Friday evening to have been invited to a gathering of the international students at Ottawa U. Better be careful there. The Carleton Ottawa U people will get me. At Ottawa U, the students were gathered for a Thanksgiving celebration. And the group that organized it, there were probably about 100, 125 students or so there and gathered for a meal. People from all over the world who are attending Ottawa U, and the group that gathered that community together invited me to come and talk a little bit about what is particular in our act of thanksgiving as a Christian community that we would want to offer and share. What is it that is particularly Christian about giving thanks, as it were, because thanksgiving is found all over the place. And the students that I was privileged to meet and talk with afterwards were from all over, China and Japan, from France, from Belgium, from Sri Lanka, from Iran, all over, and sharing together about their own traditions and cultures, commitment to giving thanks. I talked about, for us as people of faith who follow the Christian tradition, that our thanksgiving to God is for the bounty and the blessings that certainly many people do, but in particular to give thanks for the gift of Jesus and the ministry of Jesus, the gospel and the unique way in which Jesus has disclosed the character of God, a character that is disposed and committedly associated and connected with the world in love and in grace, that calls forth a response. We do not have to respond in order to earn God's favor and love, but response is that which we offer as a result of having recognized that we have received. It was a rich, rich evening indeed. But it got me thinking about the text today from Paul. And some of the students shared some of the circumstances from which they have come. Very dire circumstances. Circumstances is one that told me that they, unless they speak with their family every day, they feel out of sorts. They have a kind of a version of Skype. And tens of thousands of kilometers away the family is, and this particular student needs to connect with them because their situation is very dire. He's worried and concerned about their daily survival, their daily reality. How do we understand what I'm calling the dance of thanksgiving and joy and thoughts in the midst of this festival, this celebration weekend? And we remind ourselves that Thanksgiving as a holiday and festival is importantly a reminder that we are to adopt a posture of thanksgiving, an attitude of gratitude all year round, not only waiting for the second weekend of October. Paul has something to say about how we bring these things together. Let's review the circumstances both of Paul and the community to which he writes, because it helps us understand why he's saying the things that he does. Philippi is a military colony of Rome. The community of faith that is there, the Christians, is a very small ragtag group. They are having tremendous hardship because they have somehow responded with grace and gratitude to the missionaries who have come and shared this message, this gospel of Jesus, that they somehow, it has caught their imagination and they feel that there's some reality here that they want to give their lives to. That's all well and good, but the truth of the matter is that dissension and tensions arise because of the context in which they have made that decision. It is a hostile environment. Rome is particularly proud of Philippi and has established there a particularly strong presence. It is Rome that has promised peace and justice and righteousness for all those who would submit to its rule. It is Rome that says you must confess the emperor as Lord, and to not do that will mean that you will incur the wrath of Rome. So the Christians there are caught indeed between that which has captured their heart and their imagination, that to which they want to give their lives to, this way of Jesus, this way of believing and trusting in God and seeing that God is the source of peace and the source of justice, the source of joy, and this Roman Empire that is all around them with ample evidence. And so Paul speaks into this, but remember, what is Paul's circumstance? This is what adds to the distress of the Philippian Christians. Paul is writing this letter from prison. Paul has been arrested by this same Roman government, as it were, for stirring trouble and for causing people to follow a way that does not seem to observe strict allegiance to Rome. Paul is in deep, deep doo-doo. And so the people are not only stressed by their circumstances, but the very one who has chiefly been around them and taught them and encouraged them in this life of faith has been arrested. They cannot help but make the jump in their thoughts that maybe this will happen to us too if we continue along this way. If we continue to embrace this Jesus, this gospel, in resistance to the evidence of the empire all around us. And so it is hardship that gives birth to these words. It is a deep connection and commitment to God in spite of that gives birth to these words to the Philippian Christians. You see, joy, the joy that Paul speaks of, rejoice in the Lord always, again I say rejoice, is not something that is rooted in external circumstances. We hear and you read books about the pursuit of happiness and people are chasing happiness. Happiness in and of itself is not a bad thing. The problem with trying to chase happiness is that it is not enduring. It is absolutely dependent on what is going on. That is where the root of the word comes from. Happiness and happenings share the same root. So in order to be happy, certain things must happen in order for you to be happy. Now that's fine, but what happens when those certain things that happen are not good, are not satisfying, are distressing? Then you're not happy. So the happiness is contingent on good things happening. But we know, you and I know, that life is filled, as the poet says, of weal and woe. Filled of the good and the bad. So what happens in the bad time? We are to give up on happiness? Because it won't be coming from the happenings. What Paul is trying to urge the Philippian Christians and those who stand in the tradition of faith is that this joy is something beyond happiness. This joy is resonant in the very heart of God that is given as a gift. That's why he says, rejoice in the Lord. Even each other, we can have a great fellowship together. But you and I know that there are times when we feel profoundly alone, even in the midst of great company of support and family, that somehow we believe they do not understand our deep struggle. I know my brother loves me and my sister cares for me and my mother and my father and my children and whatever we may say, but at that deepest time, in the middle of the night when you're awake filled with anxiety and fear, yes, it can be helpful to know you have that support, but you know you stand alone somehow. Paul is speaking into that and other circumstances and saying, this God whom you have been invited to follow, to give your life to, is a God who will not abandon you, the God in whom may be found the joy. That joy is an abiding present, an abiding perspective that comes and fills our heart unbidden because we have chosen to accept it and trust it. We trust this God. It is the dire circumstances of Paul's imprisonment and the people who are experiencing daily hardships, wondering fearfully whether this will be the day when they are caught up in this new allegiance to God rather than Caesar. In the midst of that, Paul says, joy, rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord. Do not be anxious. Well, that's a funny thing to say. Do not be anxious. Well, Paul, are you for real? Come on, just look around with me. Don't be anxious. You and I know anxiety. Mary Oliver's poem, I Worried. Mary Oliver, very renowned Pulitzer Prize winner, American poet, one of the most prolific indeed, writes this in her book, Swan. I worried a lot. Will the gardens grow? Will the rivers flow in the right direction? Will the earth turn as it was taught? And if not, how shall I correct it? Was I right? Was I wrong? Will I be forgiven? Can I do better? Will I ever be able to sing? Even the sparrows can do it. And I am, well, hopeless. Is my eyesight fading, or am I just imagining it? Am I going to get rheumatism, lockjaw, dementia? Finally, I saw that worrying had come to nothing and gave it up and took my old body and went out into the morning and sang. It's one thing for Paul to say, do not worry or do not be anxious. It echoes the words of Jesus. But we remind ourselves again of that, the linguistic basis, so that we understand it and we don't again feel like, oh, we got to just try harder to be acceptable to God. It's not about that. The verbs that are used suggest continual action. In other words, Paul and Jesus are saying, do not continue in anxiety. In other words, don't court it. Don't love it. Don't just practice it on and on and on. Jesus knows, and Paul knows that we are going to be anxious at times, that we will worry. But the counsel is, don't continue in that. Here's what you do with the worry. Here's what you do with the anxiety. You give it to God. First Peter says, we cast all of our fears, all of our anxieties upon the Lord. For in there is peace. So it is an invitation on what to do when you get worried, when you get anxious. Don't continue in it. But anxiety, we know, indeed. Paul is inviting prayer and a response of faith to meet us where we are most anxious. And joy is that stabilizing reality, that stabilizing gift that God is with us, that enables us to do that. Here's how they play together. Paul goes on to invite them to think about a particular series and body of things. That which is lovely, that which is beautiful, that which is pure and noble, all of those things. But it's hard to think about those things in a sustained way if you're feeling dislocated from yourself and anxious. True? So being thankful and thinking of these good thoughts and joy fit together. And when one crumbles, the others seem to. We don't notice things. Let me give an example about how sometimes the worries of our daily life. Will my son find a job? Will my daughter recover from a deep depression? Will I meet the mortgage payments? Will this recession help my retirement when I'm there? We worry about all kinds of things daily, daily, daily. A friend of mine sent me this week a reminder of that story you've probably heard about before, but I thought it was a wonderful illustration, and I emailed her back and said, thank you, I'm going to use this on Sunday. Let me read some of the things and see if you can relate to this. In Washington, D.C., in a metro station, cold January morning, 2007, a man was standing inside playing a violin. He played six beautiful Bach pieces for about 45 minutes, and during that time, about 2,000 people walked by. You know, you see them around, those buskers and people who are playing away. After about 3 minutes, a middle-aged man noticed that there was a musician playing and slowed his pace and stopped for a few seconds and hurried on his way to meet his schedule. About 4 minutes later, the violinist received his first dollar. A woman threw the money in the hat without stopping and just kept on walking. After 6 minutes, a young man leaned against the wall to listen, looked at his watch, started off walking again. At 10 minutes, a three-year-old boy stopped, but his mother tugged him hurriedly, having to go where they needed. The kid stopped to look at the violinist again, but the mother pushed hard and the child continued to walk, turning his head as he walked the whole time, watching the violinist. Move on quickly. After 45 minutes, the musician played continuously. Only six people had stopped and listened for a short while. About 20 gave money, but continued to walk their normal pace. The man collected a total of $32. After an hour, he finished playing and silence took over. No one noticed, no one applauded. There was no recognition at all. No one knew, but this violinist was Joshua Bell. one of the greatest musicians in the world and played one of the most intricate pieces ever written with a violin worth $3.5 million. 2 days before, this same Joshua had played to a sold-out crowd in the theater in Boston where the seats average $100 each to sit and hear him play the very same thing. It's a true story. Joshua Bell and playing incognito was organized by the Washington Post to see how in the busyness of life, caught up with the worries and the anxieties of daily life, we cannot see beauty. We cannot hear and experience the gifts, a commonplace thing. So when Paul is saying how to get a handle on our anxieties, how to get a handle on that which distracts us from the gifting of God, both in joy and in beauty, counsels us to think, to shape our thoughts in ways that will help us focus on that which will bless, not only honor God, but bless our lives and others. How many times have we passed by the beauty, the grace, the love, the forgiveness, the joy of God because of our anxieties? In order that we can think on these things, we experience the joy. And it's given as a true and a free gift indeed. Joy cannot be manufactured. Joy is received. The presence of joy doesn't require, this is a very, very important thing, the absence of fear. Sometimes people feel that the fear must be gone before we have joy. Not true. Paul knew this within his own life. St. Macarius of Egypt, a 5th century monastic, he had this advice to give. I'm convinced that not even the apostles, although filled with the Holy Spirit, were therefore completely free from anxiety. Contrary to the stupid view expressed by some, I love that language in the 5th century, the advent of grace does not mean the immediate deliverance from anxiety. It is joy that comes as a resident, persistent gift of God. C.S. Lewis said that this joy is never in our power. Unsatisfied desire, which is in itself more desirable than any other satisfaction. I doubt whether anyone who has tasted it would ever, if both were in his power, exchange it for the pleasures of the world. Joy. Joy. It is the joy that positions our heart and our attitude with gratitude and delight in the Lord. It's joy in the Lord that then helps us to think the thoughts that Paul talks about. The noble, kind, generous thoughts that enable us indeed to perceive all the Joshua Bell moments in our lives and not walk by. It is this also that cultivates thanksgiving. It is a dance. Joy. What we do with our anxiety. How we think. How we give thanks. So, today, of the 30,000 thoughts that you and I will have today, think on those things that are lovely. Think on those things that are holy. Think about what it is that God is consistently at every moment of your living offering to you. Don't miss it. Because you're hurried or worried. Give to God the opportunity to make that joy come alive. That's what God wants. That's what God offers. So this Thanksgiving, yes, give thanks. Open yourself to joy. I'm going to ask the ushers now. Some of you have received and others haven't. If you haven't, little piece of paper and pencils are all around. I would like you to take some time. At the outset when you came in, you saw Corey was scrolling for us things for which we are thankful that we did a few weeks ago. I would like you to just take a moment. I wonder if Vic could help us here. Vic. Yeah, you know you were playing the piece about give thanks there on the... Could you play that while folks take some time? Is that okay? I'm going to invite you to just take some time, and I would ask you in this particular moment to do what Paul has advised the Philippians to do. Not only giving thanks and so forth, but what to think on. He says, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there be anything excellent, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. I want to invite you to just jot down what is lovely in your life. What is pure in your life, in your experience? What is honorable? What is gracious? How have you experienced grace in your life? Take some time to just write those things down. That exercise in the coming week. See how you can train your thoughts because of the joy that is given to you by God to think on those things that will position you, your heart and your mind, to be a thankful, grateful person. One who recognizing that it is God's life within you. There's a little three-year-old who is learning one of the most famous lines and verses in the Bible, John 3:16. She made a little mistake, but I thought it was instructive. She said, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him shall have eternal life." It is indeed an internal life of joy, of gratitude, of faith and grace that we seek to open ourselves to. May this Thanksgiving celebration grant us that experience of an anxiety solution and of a joy life.